I'm Dr. William Lamb. Thank you for joining us today on ServeCast. Mark Twain said, "Kindness is the language that the deaf can hear and which the blind can see." My guest today is my friend Jonathan Dukes. He's an author, educator, certified counselor, sports writer, and broadcaster. Mary's husband and Sarah Allison's dad. But to me, he's John, a longtime friend, better known as the blind pitcher. Stick around and I'll tell you why. Jonathan Dukes, my friend, welcome to ServeCast.
It is a pleasure to be here, William. It really is.
So we're just kind of sitting in my office and we're having a pretty good conversation today. I'm getting ready to have a lot of fun.
Oh, so am I.
But I got to have a disclaimer, okay? You're blind, right?
Yes, I am.
I mean, legitimately, legally blind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to have fun, so I don't want anybody who hears this episode to think that I'm making fun of a blind guy, correct?
Absolutely.
But I've been doing that all of your life or all of my life, right?
I'm the one. I will make fun of the blind guy. So, yes, please feel free to
feel
do
free
the same.
Feel free to do that. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, Jonathan. So, as I was thinking earlier and I was remembering back to our early days, you know, we were in a meeting recently and I remember asking you if I could borrow your cane.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't take account of all the people that were around us that don't really know our friendship of 42 years. They don't understand. And I heard you say, "Sure, William, but you have to tap responsibly," right?
That's right.
So,
oh, yes.
1977, I'll never forget it. I was 13 years old, and you needed somebody to walk you back at Camp Ichikone, Georgia, back to the dorm rooms.
And it was a long way from the chapel to the dorms.
It was a long way. And I remember it was night. You were, at that time, you could see in the daytime, but you couldn't see at night, correct?
Correct.
And I remember walking you literally intentionally into the ditch.
You weren't the only one.
Yeah.
So
it was a long line of friends that did that.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I remember in doing so that I heard you say to me, "William, really the blind is leading the blind again." And so today in this conversation, what we really want to do is let the blind lead those who might see or who may not see on their faith journey and what they're doing. So what do people need to know about John Dukes?
I think the important part that I start with is that I have an eye disease. It is called choroideremia. If people haven't heard of it, that's okay. Very few people have it. It's only about 5,000 people in the United States. It's 98% male. It is what is described as a retinal degenerative disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a very real sense, my retinas are just the choroid, which is part of your eye. Those, for me, are breaking down and dying. And so then they cause the retinas to break down and die.
Mm.
And so it begins, like you said, when I was younger, I had decent, I've never had good vision, but I had decent vision, but I had no peripheral vision or night vision. That's where it starts. And then kind of, it's almost like a tube slowly closing. So you lose vision, and that's where I am. I'm on that path of just losing as I go. And so I have some central vision with my right eye. No real workable vision. I describe it to people when I speak to classes here or when I speak anywhere. I describe it as hold a toilet paper tube up to your right eye, hold saran wrap over your left eye, and you're seeing about what I see on any given day.
Oh, wow. Not enough to really get around by yourself.
Not in most places. Yeah. In places I'm familiar with, yes. So I walk around the counseling center here at Lee without my cane. My clients are used to seeing me without my cane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that does mean I walk into walls. Yes, they are in the same position they were the day before. That doesn't seem to matter. I'll run into things. I'll run into people. That's when I feel most badly about it, is when there are people either checking in or something. They don't know me, and I just run right into them, and they have no idea what in the world is happening, and why did this man just slam into me? And I'll have people that I work with, they'll apologize if I run into them. And I'm like, "Listen, if you're standing still and I run into you, I don't think it's your fault." But in familiar places, I'll get around without it. But almost anywhere on campus, I'm not sure. I may could have gotten here today by walking. I didn't risk that. And ending up somewhere going, "William, where am I on campus?" I just had someone, I had a friend drive me. That was the best.
I'm pretty sure you couldn't have gotten here, Jonathan, because a few, maybe a couple of years ago, I remember seeing you walking up and down the same sidewalk on multiple occasions. And I'm thinking, hey, listen, all you got to do is just turn around and go the other way. And you did. And you turned around and came right back.
So, that's right.
I think I rescued you and took you into the Student Life House.
You did.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Well, Jonathan, let's talk about some fun memories. So I was telling Tyler, Oman is the guy who does all the recording and everything.
Great job,
here.
Tyler.
He does really good. And he and I were talking and kind of getting ready for this talk today. And I was telling him that I remember about 4 years ago or maybe 5 years ago. You don't see. I don't remember too well. So I guess it's a good. So I guess
we're
it's
a great
a good,
pair.
A good
we're
pair.
A great pair.
I was sitting in a Dunkin' booth, right? Not a Dunkin' Donuts booth, but like of those Dunkin' machines, right?
A Dunkin' machine. Like you see at a fair.
Yeah, and there were like a bunch of students out there, and I was taunting the bland guy. You remember that?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of my best memories. I live for moments like this. Are you kidding? And so that's when I know God is truly real.
There you go.
Because you were giving me a hard time.
I was.
You were telling me, there's no way you're putting me in the water. And and with the first toss, I dunked you in the water.
Yep.
It was, like I said, it's one of these memories similar to my daughter being born that just lives for me forever.
And so I got to
dunk you earlier, and then later I went back and the baseball coach, head baseball coach Mark Brew, was there.
I remember.
I missed with my first two, and he was giving me, as you did, just the hardest time there, is because he knows he can, and you know you can.
Yeah.
And other people, I'm sure, are thinking, this is barbarism. How are they making fun of him? And so with the last pitch, again, that's how I know God has blessed my life. With the last pitch, I put Mark in the water, which was again, just a joy.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and I love that day watching how you and Mary communicate, you know, and I remember her telling you, you would pace it off, and then she would tell you, you know, on a clock dial where we were sitting and where the little red lever was that you had to hit, you know, and you were precise in that. Now, you actually played softball for Key Street, a church locally here in town, when you, for many years, and you were legally blind at that point, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, isn't that, like, really dangerous, Jonathan?
I suppose. On some level, I used to say I pitch because there's not another position I could play.
That's true.
And
I agree.
And so I pitched when we lived in Mississippi. We had a co-ed team through our church and pitched on that team. And someone asked Mary one time, why are you putting your husband out there? And she said, because he's the best pitcher I've got. And so it really was, because I couldn't follow. At that point, I'd lost the ability to follow a ball in the air.
Yeah.
And even here, when we moved back here and we were playing. And so the umpire or the catcher would have to roll the ball back to me. And there were many umpires, who would apologize in mid-flight. Because if a ball goes out of play, they're going to throw another ball back to the pitcher. And it's habit for them, and I don't fault them for that. But I can see their arm cock. And I know what's coming, and I can get out of the way.
Yeah.
But just hearing the mid-throw apology, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
But yeah, loved doing it. I think I finally got too old for it. I didn't get too blind for it. I got too old for it.
Okay. Yeah, you are older than I am. You are closer to 100 than I am.
That's
right.
So significantly.
Yeah. So in 1998, you put a lot of your humor and your thoughts and your passion for people in a book called Blindsided. What was the motivation behind the book?
It started, from all things, it started when we moved from Florida to Mississippi, and so we didn't really have family in Mississippi. And I would write long emails telling stories to our family. And so there were stories about softball and about playing laser tag. And at some point in the midst of writing these, I'm like, I've always wanted to write a book. Mm. I've always dreamed of writing a book. And so I contacted our publisher, White Wing Publishing House was publishing at that point. I contacted the editor and gave him my proposal for the idea for a book. And he said, yeah, let's do it. I the motivation then became the ability for this to be normal for people.
Love it.
To not be afraid anytime I speak on campus, the first thing I will say is I have everyone raise their right hand and I ask them to repeat after me, it's okay to laugh at the blind guy.
Mm.
Because I'm going to try to do things to get them to laugh. Because if they really want to know me, they're going to laugh with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're really going to know me, they may cry with me.
Sure.
And so there was a line in the book that I probably got it from someone else, honestly. But it said, the definition of a good day is a good laugh and a good cry.
Mm.
And so I wanted to allow people to understand this because it's hard to understand, but to also be able to laugh with me.
And those of us that know you well, we may raise our left hand and you'll never realize
that's
that, right?
So I've told people speaking at church, I was like, if you're quiet enough, you can get up and walk out and I'll never know you're gone.
There you go. There you go. On page 16 in your book, let me quote, a handicap of any kind opens the doors to walk into the lives of others and be a difference maker. Stepping into someone else's need eases my need. Now, you're a certified counselor at Lee University, right? Or a licensed counselor.
Licensed counselor.
You are, you know, a tremendous caregiver here. You make a lot of impact on a lot of people's lives.
I appreciate that.
How does that, I mean, you write that. You that comes from you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stepping into someone else's need eases my need. I mean, I can't imagine, and if you read the book, you know, I think it's maybe your father-in-law said that deaf is better than blind or something like that.
Yes.
One day you were trying to find your food on your plate.
I was trying to find a green bean.
Yeah, there you go.
So and he just you never knew how invasive green beans can be on a plate. But.
Yeah. So talk about that quote. Why is it, and in what ways have you seen how you're stepping into someone else's chaos with your own difficulties, and how is that helping you?
It's remarkable because that line was written ages before I ever became a counselor. I mean, I worked in my local church. I worked in my local church pretty much all my adult life. I've worked in camps with teenagers, and you and I both have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And but that was years before I ever became a counselor. And so even as you read it, it echoes, it reverberates even more in my mind of now. I sit on a daily basis with people who to me, their need, what they are going through, dwarfs anything that's happening to me.
Mm.
It there is no comparison, and I'm not trying to compare need versus need, but when I look at them, I'm like, mine's a little thing compared to the pain they're in, the agony they've been in, the trauma they've suffered, whatever it may be. And so being able to put yourself into someone else's life and experience with them their pain, their heartache, it helps me see for myself, pun intended or take the pun, it helps me see that I'm going to be okay.
Mm.
I'm going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can meet someone else's need, if I can go into their heartache and ease it, if I can go into their pain and sit with them in it, it's a good day.
Mm.
It's a really good day.
Mm. So tell us, Jonathan, how does your eye disease impact your faith? I mean, you say to me just now, you know, William, I got the easy life, right? Well, for those of us who can see, we obviously don't think you have the easy life. And I know I'm again making a pun at this, but how has this journey of blindsided, even, you know, not being able to see, how has that impacted your faith?
It this has taken decades.
Mm.
This is a walk God and I have taken for a long time, and I'm a counselor, so I don't mind my crying.
Sure.
And I'm good with it.
I'm not, but I'll be patient and listen.
Okay. Very good. And it took me a long time to understand for myself that God has a purpose for all of it. A friend of mine... we used to share an apartment years ago, Galen Bell.
Yep.
One of the most famous theological things I've ever heard is God never says, oops.
Mm.
God never goes, my bad. And so he could see this coming for me. And he had this. God had this.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's allowed me to grow into this to the point that I can say, how has it impacted my faith? Hurts some days.
Mm.
Do I still get angry sometimes? Sure. Drop something at your feet and you know it's there and you can't find it.
Mm.
It's not a happy thing.
Yeah.
But over the course of time, the place I have come to is that I believe he's going to heal me.
Mm.
Now, let's go to the next question. Because as my wife Mary talks about, it's always the next question.
Mm.
So the next question is, oh, when's he going to do it? And I give him prerogative to do that when he wants.
Mm.
And so whether that's in this life or the next one, I'm good. I will have people who will still today at times just come up to me on the street, coming out of a restaurant, coming out of a coffee shop, and say, do you mind if I pray for God to heal your eyes?
Hmm.
I don't mind. Don't mind at all. But what I will always ask them now is, while you're doing that, could you please pray that I be everything God needs me to be?
Hmm.
Whether that's with eyesight or no eyesight, because that's more important to me. And so how has it impacted my faith? I think it's made it stronger. I think it's made it deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I trust him a whole lot more than I did years ago.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like I said, I know he's got this.
So obviously in the last couple of minutes, you explained to us, word pictures, if you will, your relationship yes. with Almighty, right?
Yes.
So you've been a follower and you're a leader, but do you consider yourself to be more of a leader or more of a follower?
See, I love this question because I've gotten to kind of live this out over the last, let's say the last 20 years, maybe since we moved back here. Understanding what I feel is kind of my place. I feel like I lead in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I feel like I am able to do is come alongside a leader and, in a sense, be the one who holds that leader's arms up. I mean, the story of Moses. And so the battle was for the Israelites as long as his arms were up. But when his arms got tired and they came down, then the battle went to the enemy. And so getting to be alongside leaders and hold their arms up, be there to support them. Does that show in leadership at times? It does. Now, is that purely a leader? Maybe not in my definition, or maybe not in the definition of other people. And so I lead beside, maybe that's the way I phrase it. I lead beside people because I want to come alongside leaders who have vision and passion and desire and say, what can I do to help you now?
Mm-hmm. So how do you define, or what's a core tenet for you as it relates to leadership?
This is not just patronizing the host, but to serve.
Yeah.
To serve. I mean, that's kind of that piece of, I'm here to help you. What can I do to help you? I want to serve. And so service is paramount to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the place I find myself, my groove in a sense that I find is in encouraging people.
Mm-hmm.
I laugh and tell people it's my spiritual gift that I want to encourage people. I want to tell you what a great job you're doing. I want to tell you how you impress me. I want you to understand what a valuable part, not just of the kingdom, but what a valuable part of humanity you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me is a key to leadership, is being able to see someone's strengths, see someone's gifts, and pat them on the back, tell them something that's going to take their day to a different level where they go, it's nice to have people who believe in me.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, let me ask you, let's shift for just a minute. And
okay.
Let me ask you a that's a probing question, I guess. You know, I remember one account on the softball field when you, the catcher obviously rolls the softball back to you and hopes you'll catch it,
yes,
right? Because it's
going to
be right in your glove. But then when you step your foot off of the pitcher's mound, you know, and you can't find it, your teammates will say, you know, left 3 paces and right 2 paces,
oh, yeah,
and back up and go forward. So living with this most of your life, you and Mary, 28 years this year,
mm-hmm,
you know, celebrating marriage. And
absolutely.
Your little girl is, what, 8 years old now?
13.
Eighth grade.
And 5'9".
And you are old. You are getting old.
Oh,
and
don't
so,
you know it. Don't you know it.
Yeah.
Every morning when I wake up, I realize it.
There you go. So in thinking about that and what you were just sharing, talk to me about this idea of service. So how can someone with so many challenges like you and so many disappointments, you know, you chase a green bean and then you give up, or you can't find that thing which you just dropped in front of your feet,
yes,
you know, or you're not able to see, you know, your baby girl's beautiful face, right? How do you still do what you do in the acts of service, realizing that you have so much that's still unanswered in your own life? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so this is something, and some days I'm decent at reminding myself. Other days I need people to remind me.
Mm.
There are things that are taken away from me. There are things I can't do that you can do.
Mm.
There are things I can't do that Tyler can do, that the people in my life can do. And so I know there are things I can't do. The people in my life, from my best friend Mary to all the other people, the people I work with are amazing at this. They tell me constantly what I do,
mm,
what I can do.
Mm.
Some days I'm decent at telling myself. And then there are days when I'm not. And that's when it's the people around me who remind me, look at what you do. Look at the people you affect. Look at the impact you have. And so, again, the visual puns just ride through this constantly. I won't see it, but there are days I feel it.
Mm.
And it's on those days that I can literally go, yes, I did that well today.
Mm. Give us an example, John.
I guess the easy one is sitting with my clients.
Okay.
That's the easy one. That's my wheelhouse. That's my 5-day a week. Because in a very real way, I know I'm limited. I don't catch nonverbals a whole lot. I call it a win when I see a nonverbal. I'm like, chalk one up. This is my day. I just hit it out of the park, bottom of the ninth. If I actually see someone's nonverbal, I'll actually point it out to them. Hey, I caught this. Isn't that great? But I think sitting with my clients and who are incredible, persevering, models of what resiliency is, to get pushed down, to get back up, to keep going, to go to class, to work through whatever issues there may be, because they have goals in mind and they have things they want to do and places they want to go and impact they want to have. But I can sit with them. I had one client one time, and I loved her to death. And she said, I love coming in here because I realized at some point, you can't see me. I don't have to wear makeup to this.
Wow.
I can come in and cry, and it doesn't matter to you.
Wow.
And I've had clients before that I've told, listen, I'll turn around. If even the idea that I'm looking at you is a problem, I'll turn around. I don't have to be facing you to hear you, and I'm here to hear you. And so getting to sit in those moments of, I don't have to see them to be with them.
Right.
And that's a powerful thing.
See, now you're about to step into the preacher here.
I'll
you
get
know,
close.
that you don't have, how do you say that? You don't have to see them to believe.
To be with them.
To be with them.
Yep.
Is it that our relationship with God? You don't have to see him to be with him?
Absolutely.
That even when you can't see him, you can be with him?
I mean, one of the biggest things I know and one of the biggest things I love to share is you may not know he's there, and he's there. You may not see him. You may not see him in the people around you. You may not experience him in the moment of your pain or in the moment of your loss, and he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I get to play that out. This kind of trusting for me in my daily life, this kind of trusting that people will be there. When I lift my right hand, there's going to be a left shoulder for me to go to.
Wow.
And so that's part of my trust piece is I have to believe that people are going to be there. People I work with, it's so rote memory to them now. They just position themselves off my right shoulder in front of me
mm-hmm.
and know I'm going to take their left shoulder and we go.
Mm-hmm. So, John, what do you say to the person who is struggling today who's like, I'm tired of people helping me? I mean, are there days you get tired of anybody helping you? I mean, you can't get to work without some help. You can't get home without help, you know? You can chase your green bean around the plate for long enough that somebody's going to be, you know,
Amen.
Caring enough to realign it for you.
I mean,
what do you do when do you ever get tired of receiving the help or being dependent on somebody else to even cope? And if you do, what does that look like? And how should people who will be dependent on others for the rest of their life look at life now? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, The quick answer is yes. Do I get tired of it some days? Yes. Would I like to be able to get myself to work?
Mm.
Sure. When Mary has conflicts, and it would be the easy out for me to pick Sarah Allison up from school.
Oh, wow.
And I can't.
Yeah.
And when... Here's a good one. When I go to the cafeteria on campus, I can't get my own food. Mary gets my food. My dear friend Brittany gets my food. Whoever I'm with gets my food for me.
I want to do that one day.
I'd be happy. Will you actually tell me what you're getting me?
I don't know.
I know. There's the catch. They'll at least tell me what's on my plate. I'd be honored. And so the easy answer is yes, I get tired of it some days.
Yeah.
I just like to come to work. I'd like to do my job like everyone else does without all the help, all the accommodation, all the stuff that comes with me. But again, I have to come back. I have to circle back. And yes, it gets tiring. I will cry about it. I'll get upset about it. But I have to come back to, he knows about this. God knows about this.
Sure.
He's not off checking out Australia and he missed this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's not taking care of refugees in the Sudan, and he's forgotten me. Mm. He hasn't forgotten me. Mm-hmm. And so it gets tiring. But then I find out just how blessed I am. Mm-hmm. Because I know I have people.
Sure.
I have so many people that I can text, I can call. My wife says, for a blind man, you text more than anybody I know. And she's right. But I have so many people I can just contact,
yeah,
and they'll do just about anything.
Sure.
The thing I have to get them the point I have to get across to them is, if you can't, that's okay.
Oh, wow.
Because they feel so bad that they can't help. And I will tell them, if you can't, here's our deal, okay? And I need you to sign on to this deal. If you can't help me one day, you don't feel bad if you don't mind me asking again. Because I'll come back again. Because it's not like tomorrow I won't need something.
Wow.
I describe myself, mm-hmm, and I may have told you this before. I describe myself to people as a professional beggar. Because I will ask just about anybody for just about anything.
Yeah.
Because I live my life asking people for help.
Yeah.
And so I don't mind asking for other people.
Wow.
Because we all need help sometimes.
Sure.
One of the most painful things to me is people who say, no, I can't ask for help. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, do you know what you're missing?
Yeah.
Because there are people that can pour out into your life because they get to bless you today. Mm-hmm. And you miss that because I have to do it on my own. And so maybe this is my hard case lesson. I can't do it on my own.
Sure. Sure. As a reminder and an encouragement to that, John, who are the, now most people call you Jonathan, but I call you John. Been doing
absolutely
that all our lives,
yep,
man. Who are the mentors? Who are those people that have been your balcony people? And, you know, I want to know why they were,
okay,
and what difference they've made, because our listeners, I want them to be able to hear today that, that you just might be the shoulder somebody needs at the moment they need to lean before falling.
Yep.
You know, but who are the mentors? What do they look like in your life? And let's talk about them for just a minute.
I'm going to go timeline.
Yep.
For you. At the beginning, at the start, have to be my mom and dad. They sat in that doctor's office with me when I was 12. When the doctor said, you're going to be blind by the time you're 32. And it was a 5-hour ride home. Mm. I know I cried all the way home. I'm not sure if they did. Mm. Maybe. But then what they showed me is, keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. Keep going. They didn't keep me from things. They didn't prevent me from doing. Because it would have been easy for them to go, oh no, your limitations, you don't want to stretch yourself. They let me do just about anything I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Play softball.
Played softball. I got to be in marching band.
There you go.
Tripped over a yard marker one time because I didn't see it. Went flat on my face and bent my horn all to pieces. But loved being in marching band.
Yeah.
And at that point, I could. If you put me on a field now,
yep,
God help us all. I may still be there an hour later. And so my parents first, growing up in Georgia. And you'll know these people so well. Bubba Cardin was my first camp counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me how much fun it can be to be a Christian.
Yep.
He showed me how to laugh. And then Lannis Lewis, a dear friend, he did mine and Mary's premarital counseling. As a pastor in Georgia, and he loved so well, had me in his family's life, in his life, and just loved. And so I got to see that example from him, mm-hmm, and Terry, his wife, and mm-hmm, all the time. And kind of as we progress in the timeline, I come to being here and the people I work with. I mean, I'm older than them. I'm older than all of them, pretty much.
You're almost as old as dirt, John.
Yeah, that's right. So it's me and dirt and then dinosaurs. And so I'm older than all of them, but the way they care for me, the way I see them care for others, I tell people at times when I grow up, I want to be like them. And that is my blind guy watch that I forgot to take off my wrist.
It's okay. I love it. I hope they heard it.
And so, I don't even change it for church. So it just announces it's 12 o'clock. And so it's time to go home, boys and girls. Or it's time to go to lunch.
He tried to cover it. Y'all can't see it, but he tried to cover it.
That's my reflex action.
They weren't seeing it. They actually were hearing it, that's Jonathan. Right. So go ahead.
But to my local church.
Yeah.
There were three ladies. These are incredible women of faith. One has gone on to her reward. Her name was Eleanor Wilson. She was the most encouraging person I've ever been around. She could make you feel good about yourself no matter what you were doing. And so she filled my life with encouragement. And then there are two ladies right now. We love them. Marion calls them the Bobbsey twins at our church. Joyce Van is 93 years old.
Yep, I know her.
Oh yes, and so if I'm half as spunky as she is at 63, at 93, if I'm half as spunky as she is when I get to 63, I'll be a happy camper.
There you go.
Because she is just this powerful force. And Laverne Davis and her husband, Richard Davis, who passed away a few years ago, they teach us all the time, and they teach me by just loving me.
Yep.
And getting to see that kind of faith and that kind of commitment, you just want to say, I'm in this for the long haul because they did work, and I want to do that kind of work. I want to be there for people the way they have been there for people.
Good stuff, man. It's the reality of relationships. And
it's the truth.
I think it's the whole idea that, you know, sometimes we give and sometimes we have to take. And we have to be willing to be on both sides. Reciprocity is a reality that I think most of us don't really understand the value of it, but it does help us along the way. John, we just got a couple more minutes on this on this episode. So what would you want to say to our listeners? Now, let me give you a frame of reference. We know we have a lot of Lee University students and folks in town that are listening to us.
Yes.
We also have a reach to about 38 countries and 46 states or so currently.
Remarkable.
So for whoever's listening to us today, what do you want them to know about the blindness that hasn't kept you from being able to see the Creator who let you be blind? Is that a fair question?
Oh, absolutely. There are no unfair questions to me. There really aren't. I think the biggest thing to me is, one, I have to believe He loves me. He shows me in so many ways He does. And if He loves me, I want to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I believe He loves me, then I can trust Him for what's ahead. If I continue to lose my vision, I likely will. It's the way the disease works. If I continue to lose my vision, I may not be able to even see a silhouette of you the next time. If you and I sit at this table the next time. And so I have to trust Him that He'll be there then, like He has for the last 57 years. And He's going to put people there who are going to love me the way I need to be loved, who are going to care for me the way I need to be cared for. And so for somebody else today, if you're thinking, I don't know if I can trust that He loves me, I want to try to tell you, I think you can. And then if you can trust him, then you can find people that you can then trust.
Hmm. Our friend Gary Riggin says, trust is a risk survived.
I love that man.
It's a great phrase. In the book Blindsided, the opening cover, my friend John penned these words. William, thank you for believing in these stories and for believing in me. I pray that one day I can return the blessing you have been to Mary and me. You are a great friend, your brother, Jonathan Dukes. Our love to Angela and the kids. 2 Corinthians 5:17. Your writing is better than your sight, by the way. But
thank you.
The reason I read that is because I think I want to say to you today, John, that you have been a friend to many because you brought laughter, you brought consistency, and you have remained faithful. And for that, my friend, we want to say thanks. It's been great to have you on Servcast.
It has been an honor and a pleasure, William. An honor and a pleasure.
Great. Stick around and contemplate as you listen to this song today. Until next time, remember, you're made for more.
I am confident in your promises. You have never failed me. And my soul will rest in your faithfulness always. I will wait for you as your spirit moves. Where you go, I'll follow. Through a drought or storm, I'll confess I'm yours always. What you have started, you will complete it. For my soul, on the horizon is what you've promised. I press on until I see what my faith knows. Found within your hand is a you've promised. I press on until I see what my faith knows. What you have started, you will complete it. Your word is like an anchor for my soul.